This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a chance today to meet one of the few, the proud, the women Marines of World War II. 94-year-old Gloria Saucier of Las Vegas, Nevada, originally from Roselle Park, New Jersey. She learned to fly by age 16, but with the WASP program shutting down, she became one of more than 22,000 American women who answered the recruiter's call to be a Marine, free a man to fight. She joined the Marine Corps Women's Reserve in 1944 and soon was off to boot training at Camp Lejeune in North Carolina.
You mentioned you had drill instructors who had fought on Guadalcanal. Male Marines are fighting all over the Pacific at this point, but the whole purpose of the Women Marine program was to take a job for a man so he could go and fight, right? Did that seem like a noble purpose for you, or was there part of you that said, hey, maybe we should go overseas too?
Well, at that time, since I knew that women Marines didn't go overseas, the WACs, the Army gals, they did go overseas. Some of them did. But I remember 2 years ago, I made a memorial speech, and it was on Veterans Day. The thing that I said in the speech, and I truly feel this, is that there was a young man in my graduating class in high school, and he was the first man that was killed. He was killed at Guadalcanal, and his name was Jackie Rydell, and his father owned a hardware store, and Jackie was very handsome, great football hero. Everybody loved him, and I often thought he gave his life, and had he been spared, would he have married the hometown girl? Would he have become a very famous football player? These are things that I think of. So the reason why I'm giving this speech, it's to honor all the Jacks and Jackies that are our service people now. So I feel that this should be a Jackie Rydell Day. He was a great guy. He really was. I'm digressing, and I don't want to do it. No.
I think that's one of the most powerful things we can talk about, because the reality is 406,000 Americans died in World War II. They never got to live the kind of life that you've had for the last 70-plus years. And when you tell those stories, it puts it in perspective. And as for you, was there something within the Marine Corps at that time that you were hoping to do, a duty or assignment that maybe you thought you might draw?
No, I was very happy being transferred to El Toro.
Well, you've got to tell us the story of how that happened, because that wasn't your first assignment after you got out of boot camp.
No, my first assignment was in Washington, D.C. in Officers Performance. And Officers Performance is where we would have to type the activities. This was of the pilots, of the fighter pilots in the Pacific, and you had a monthly report. And on each page, they would give the name of the pilot, his religious affiliation, his background, his education, college education, etc. So, you know, naturally being very young and typing up these documents, you got to know some of these pilots, and you felt you got to know them pretty well. And then I remember then you would finally get one where one would have been shot down and closed the files on that particular person. So I did enjoy working in Washington, but it was one young gal, she was an officer in the Marine Corps. She was married to a Marine, but she became pregnant, so she had to leave the Marine Corps. She didn't want to, but she had to leave. And she said, the last thing I'm going to do, she is, I'm going to get Gloria West out of line company and put her at El Toro in the tower, closer to aviation. So I'm really beholden to her, because that was a very nice gesture. And I think that's how I got it. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't have. I don't have any special skills. I mean, you know, I could fly a plane a little bit, but I've always had a love of flying. I think it's something that gets in your blood. I don't know. Sometimes I go overboard.
So you're there in Washington, D.C., typing up all these reports about the flying leathernecks overseas, and they find out about your history and interest in aviation, this friend of yours, so she recommends you to be transferred out to the West Coast. So what were your duties out there in Southern California at El Toro?
Well, in those days, we didn't have as far as control towers, you have to realize that we had flash guns, and flash guns are light guns, and they're like red and yellow, like traffic lights. So what we did, there were a lot of practice carrier landings. Most of the planes were either Corsairs, F4Us, or Hellcats, and that's what we did. It was pretty exciting times, you know, and El Toro was I really enjoyed El Toro. It was a wonderful station.
So what did you have to do there? What, give us a sense of a daily performance that you had to carry out.
I just would report to the tower in the morning. We'd have to check, you know, the flight schedules, what's going on.
So you were air traffic controller, basically?
Well, basically, but not what you would consider today's state. We didn't have the sophisticated equipment. Like I said, we used ray guns, radio. I worked with a couple other gals. There were about five of us in the tower. But I always enjoyed the when they practiced the carrier landings, because there'd be maybe four or five planes taking off and landing at the same time. And a lot of precision flying. And I thought that was always interesting.
And you got to tell them all what to do, or who was first? And
no, well, most of the pilots were seasoned. They had a lot of experience. So I think they probably would end up telling us what to do instead of us telling them what to do. But they had a lot of, I felt there was more respect for women in the Marine Corps affiliated with aviation.
You mean as opposed to away from aviation?
As opposed to line company, which is the opposite. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So the pilots treated you ladies pretty well?
Yes.
You had to be grossly outnumbered, right?
Well, yes.
Which can be a good thing, I guess.
Which can be a very good thing, yes. But, geez, you're bringing back memories. I do remember we had two majors, and they were both Irishmen. They were pilots, but they worked in the control tower as well. They're always arguing, but in a nice way, but they couldn't start the day off without an argument. They were both from the same county in Ireland. That may have something to do with it. I know one was O'Brien, and the other one was Kelly. They were amusing. They were a lot of fun, but they were good pilots as well. That's about all. I wasn't there very long. I was in the Marine Corps from 44 to 46, just during the duration of the war. One thing that became very realistic to me was when I was in boot camp. At night, we had these bunk beds, I remember, and I always slept on the top. And when they would wake us up in the morning, they would throw the switch and the lights would flood the barracks. And I remember the first night I was there, I fell off the top bunk bed because of the light flash. But on another serious note, it was one morning again in the barracks during boot camp. It was around 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. I heard this loud scream. The lights came on, and I saw this one girl. She was just crying her heart out and screaming. Well, what had happened? Her husband was a Marine. And she just got notified. Why they notified her 2 or 3 in the morning, I don't know, that he had been killed. And I think you have little bits of realism like that. It brings it home. And then you realize what you're doing and what you're fighting for. And I hope I did some good. I mean, we all like to think we were important. But like I say, the Marine Corps really rewarded me with all the gifts of education and other things that they gave me, and discipline. And I even think today, as old as I am, I still carry my shoulders back. And I think it has something to do with boot camp. I really do.
I'm sure there's no doubt that's the case. So what about the end of the war? Were you still at El Toro when that developed?
No, I was transferred to Miramar, which is another Marine Corps air station.
Which is still in operation, and in fact is where the only Marine Corps Aviation Museum, the Flying Leathernecks Air Museum, is. Have you been there?
No, I haven't.
You ought to go. They'd love to have you.
Pappy Boynton?
They have a lot about Pappy Boynton, about Joe Foss.
Joe Foss, I have to tell you. Joe Foss, the biggest thrill of my life. I got to fly with Joe Foss.
What?
Yes.
How come you didn't tell me this before?
Well, you made me think of Joe Foss. Joe Foss, after he did active duty, he was assigned to fly the mail run. And he would fly the mail run from El Toro to Santa Barbara, to Goleta, which is right outside of Santa Barbara, the Marine Corps Air Station there. And so they asked, I was in the tower, and they said, well, who wants to fly with Joe? And of course, I raised my hand. And so I got to fly with him. Great guy, wonderful guy. He was, I think he was a major at the time. But I do remember he smoked these big black cigars, terrible. But he was so nice. And he let me handle the plane a little bit while we were flying, no big deal. But it was I remember it was a Beechcraft. It was a high wing. But we flew the mail run, and I did it one other time with him. I did it twice. He went on to become governor of South Dakota. But he was quite a hero. I mean, he was very quiet, very serious, good pilot, of course.
Most decorated pilot there was at the time. Oh, really? Medal of Honor winner, yeah.
I did not know that, yeah.
How'd he treat you?
Oh, he was very nice, very polite, and he, with, you know, it, with a lot of respect. And I, of course, I was admire him the whole time, you know, and I was thrilled to pieces that I could, I thought something I could tell my grandchildren. Yeah. And I just forgot about it.
Well, you got to go down there to San Diego now at that Flying Leather Necks Museum. They have a whole display that's nothing but Joe Foss and stories about him. Yeah. So Miramar is where you were when the war came to an end?
I was discharged. I was discharged from Miramar.
Well, you know, we've heard stories about the end of the war in Times Square or San Francisco and certainly ships at sea. I've heard some of those stories. But if you go to San Diego now, they've got a giant, larger-than-life statue of that kiss in Times Square with the sailor and the nurse.
Really?
They do, but I'm wondering, what was that celebration like at the time in San Diego when news of VJ Day came? Were people out in the streets celebrating? Did you guys do anything special?
I think I had a beer. I don't remember. We did a lot of celebrating. I don't specifically remember VJ or VE. I remember being discharged and going home. It was great to get back home again. And then I was preparing. I still wanted to be involved with flying. So I wanted to be an airline hostess. And TWA was my choice because they flew overseas and eventually I would like to have gone overseas. But I flew in for 5 years, loved every minute of it, and started out with DC-3s onto Constellations. I never flew on jets. The jets came later. I think the jets came around, 56, somewhere around there.
Well, I imagine that had to be a little bit different from being a flight attendant today.
I know. I belong to an organization of retired flight attendants, and I still have one friend who's still flying. It's so different. It's so different because the security that you have to go through and the disrespect that passengers will give you, it just wasn't the same. It was, it was the best of times, you know, to quote Charles Dickens, but the passengers were very polite, well-dressed, very respectful of us. We felt the same way towards the passengers. But now, with the security and everything that you have to go through, it's not fun anymore. When passengers would get on planes, they would walk on the tarmac and just board that way. Remember one time in Chicago, there was a very, very bad snowstorm and a DC-3, and you have to be careful because of the icing on the wings. So what they did, they got this little cart, a mule, I think they call them. They dragged the plane into the hangar. We boarded passengers in the hangar. The little mule took us out to the runway, and then we took off. This prevented us from getting a lot of extra ice on the leading edge of the wings. But it was different. It was so entirely different.
Well, and I can hear the sentimentality there and the fact that you miss some of the things about it. But is there anything that you think back on about how you guys did it in the 1950s in commercial aviation as a flight attendant that you say, I can't believe we did that?
Well, we had to wear high heels and we'd have a food service and we would serve. I can't believe that I did this. One time I was bending down, holding a tray, and we hit, they call them air pockets, they aren't, but we hit an updraft, and I flew up and came right down and was just as I started out, the tray in hand and...
So your whole body in a squatting position, right, holding a tray, flies up off the floor of the airplane, and you come back down, and you didn't lose anything.
No. Yeah, we had good times.
It's time for another break. Gloria Saucier of Las Vegas, Nevada is our guest today. There's another pretty colorful anecdote about her TWA flight attendant days to come. And I think you're really going to be floored by what this World War II Marine discovered during her honor flight to Washington, D.C. We'll hear how that journey to our nation's capital proved to be a journey back in time to rediscover a connection to her past. You'll find a short video about that part of Gloria's story at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and we'll be right back after this.